Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Thanks for tuning in today. New York Times columnist Joe Nocera is here now. You may associate him most with writing about finance and economics, but he also writes passionately about other things like the abuses in college football and, since the Newtown shootings, several columns about guns. And we will touch on some of each of those. Hi, Joe. Welcome back to WNYC and Happy New Year.
Thanks, Brian. Happy New Year to you. I'm happy to be here.
Can I start with you on the financial implications of the fiscal cliff deal? Wall Street seems to be mollified, at least for the moment.
Well, that's a momentary thing. I mean, you know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And by that measure, Congress has completely lost its mind. You know, we've gone from debt ceiling crisis to sequester, which was set up specifically to put a gun to their heads. Right. And so then they kicked the can on sequester for 2 months. So we've gone from being able to wait almost a year to now waiting for 2 months. And I suspect in 2 months they'll punt it for another month and then 2 weeks and then a week. We could be doing this for the entire Congress.
One thing I think that gets consistently underreported about the new marginal tax rates is that the 39.6%, the new higher rate, applies only to income above the $400,000 or $450,000 a year, not on all the income that person makes.
That's why they call it marginal tax rates, because you know you're paying the marginal income that you make above a certain amount. You pay the higher rate. That's exactly right.
So, for example, a stat I saw on CNN last night is that the average household making $500,000 to $1 million a year will pay an extra $6,700 in taxes. In other words, less than 1% more of their total income. And I think, was it worth 10 years of rancor just for that?
Well, you know, the amazing thing is that the Republicans don't even want that, that they've become such a no-tax a party that even something as insignificant as that is unacceptable. And the president, having made that a key pillar of his campaign, he needed to show that he could do something. The thing I think people miss or don't focus on enough is that what the hardcore Republican Tea Party types want is to shrink the government. That's what they want. So anything that just maintains the status quo is unacceptable. And that's why they're willing to go over the debt. That's why they're willing to have another debt ceiling crisis. They want it. They're looking forward to it.
And I saw Grover Norquist on television this weekend, for example, being very candid about that. He said the issue is not the deficit.
Right.
The issue is government spending. Government is too big.
They want to shrink government. And that is the goal. And so when liberals say, you know, it's a false equivalency to blame both parties, not that that's not correct, but if you put yourself in the shoes of a Tea Party person, you almost have to think, what other choice do they have? Because people who've wanted to shrink the government forever and ever and ever have generally been content with only slowing the rise of government.
On the other hand, I wonder how much of a deficit hawk you are. Your colleague David Brooks was here last hour, and his column this week includes stats about the ballooning deficit and debt as a total amount of money and as a percentage of GDP if something isn't done that's really different on spending, as well as now the tax rates that have been changed, that it's now, what is it, 78% of GDP, and in a few years it's going to be over 100% of GDP, and that this is just a bomb on our children and grandchildren.
Well, I'm not a deficit hawk like David is, but I'm not a deficit
denier.
I hate to use that word, because if he's listening in Princeton, I'm in big trouble, like Paul Krugman is. You know, I think that take, for example, Medicare, which is probably the most looming entitlement problem and the biggest reason for growth.
Everybody agrees.
So the real problem with Medicare spending is not Medicare. It's health care costs. And if you could change the healthcare system, you would fix the Medicare problem instantly. And if you don't fix the healthcare problem and all you do is, for instance, raise by 2 years the eligibility for Medicare. Basically, you're telling all these people you're on your own for all these problems, and then Medicare kicks in. You're not solving the problem.
On the other hand, critics of Obamacare say the so-called Affordable Care Act did everything but make care affordable. It covered more people who were uninsured, which needed to be done, but it didn't do anything to break the cost curve. Do you agree?
I totally agree with that. I mean, one of the painful things about this president is that he throws out these ideas and then some others have to figure out how to do it. I mean, Barney Frank and Chris Dodd wrote the financial regulations. The Senate and the House wrote the health care legislation. And now, you know, instead of having an agenda on guns instantly, I mean, my God, the problem's been around his entire life, he outsources it to Joe Biden. So you just kind of wonder, you know, what specifically he wants to do.
He outsourced the fiscal cliff negotiations
yes, he did.
To Joe Biden, and he got it done.
Well, he got something done. He didn't get a grand bargain done. And, you know, it's probably true that we won't get a grand bargain as long as it's this Congress versus this president.
You know, as we move on to guns, it kind of, you know, it felt like a change of topic to me when I was figuring out what we were going to talk about. But in a way, it's a similar topic because you say the president is delegating to others on the question of guns. And I was really surprised watching the president on Meet the Press on Sunday when David Gregory asked him if he was optimistic about getting things done in the new political environment of his reelection. He said, yes, I'm optimistic about immigration. I'm optimistic about energy. We can get something done on the economy. And he left it to Gregory to bring up the question of guns. He didn't raise it himself. So here's a little bit of that exchange after Gregory jumped in.
Those are four huge things, yeah. And you didn't mention after Newtown, although I know you're thinking about it, new gun regulations.
Yes.
Mayor Bloomberg of New York told me a couple of weeks ago on this program that ought to be your number one mm-hmm. agenda item. You know how hard this is. Do you have the stomach for the political fight for new gun control laws?
You know, David, I think anybody who was up in Newtown, who talked to the parents, who talked to the families, understands that you know, something fundamental in America has to change. And all of us have to do some soul searching, including me as president, that we allow a situation in which 20 precious small children are getting gunned down in a classroom. And you know, I've been very clear that you know an assault rifle ban, you know, banning these high-capacity clips, background checks, that there are a set of issues that I have historically supported and will continue to support.
But can you get it done? I mean, the politics
and,
is the question.
And so the question is, are we going to be able to have a national conversation and move something through Congress? I'd like to get it done in the first year. I will put forward a very specific proposal based on the recommendations that Joe Biden's task force is putting together as we speak. And so this is not something that I will be putting off.
President Obama on Meet the Press on Sunday. So he really got into it once he was pushed, but he had to be pushed. What do you make of that?
Okay. One of the things that I've noticed over his first term, whether it was the Wisconsin shooting, Aurora, the Fort Hood shooting, a number of other shootings. The Newtown shooting was the very first time he actually uttered the word gun. Everyone before that, he was the empathator in chief. The one in, was it Aurora where, oh no, when Gabby Giffords was shot, mm-hmm. you know, he had a town meeting in I believe, Tucson. And, you know, it ended with applause and cheering. We'll come back. We're going to be so great. Yada, yada.
Nothing.
Nothing about guns. And I believe he's terrified of taking on the gun lobby.
And he did say in that answer that it's really going to depend on public opinion. He can't do anything unless, I guess, either public attitudes change or those majorities of people who do support some of these particular reforms, even a majority of NRA members, according to some right. polls, that they get activated on.
Right. And one thing also I might add, you know, the U.S. is hung up on things that they've tried before, you know, trying to extend background checks and and eliminating assault weapons. But what we never do is look abroad and see what other countries do. And I'm particularly struck by South Africa and Australia, which both had serious gun cultures that changed after mass shootings or after the use of guns just got out of control.
They really changed?
Australia completely changed. And one of the things you have to do to get a gun in Australia is you have to have two people testify about your character. In the shootings that we've had recently, although the shooters are undoubtedly mentally ill, they would not be stopped by a background check for mental illness, because our mental illness system is so such a mess that they don't, these people don't get any help. So, you know, you're still going to put guns in the hands of people who want to kill a lot of other people with purely extending the background check.
Joe Nocera, New York Times columnist, my guest on WNYC. We'll take your phone calls coming up, too, on any of the things that we've been talking about on the show so far today. Obviously, the fiscal cliff, the Sandy relief bill, guns after Newtown and in the new Congress, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, with Joe Nocera, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Did you see the op-ed by David Cole in the Times today about gun laws and race? The biggest gun crackdowns in this country, signed by people like Governor Ronald Reagan, came when black people exercised their Second Amendment rights, and it scared white people, like after slavery ended and when the Black Panthers started to talk about gun rights as integral to civil rights.
Right.
And I think he made a crucial point that it's still urban teens being shot by each other who are the primary victims of gun violence, not kids in places like Newtown. So the gun control debate tends to focus on background checks. Tends to focus on assault weapons, mm-hmm. but maybe it really needs to focus on these background checks that keep illegal guns off the national marketplace, because most of the gun deaths really are one by one by one in cities, not en masse in malls and suburban elementary schools.
Well, that's completely true. What the mass killings do is put a face on the irrationality. You know, that little girl in Harlem was shot by her stepbrother. Do you remember this case where he had come home and he was arguing with his mother and he shot the daughter and then shot the mother and then went out and they – the reason it was a big story is because they shot 88 bullets at him and he was still alive. Mm-hmm. That is what happens every day. And the only reason that story got in the paper was because the killer, the cops couldn't bring him down. Otherwise, it's a non-story. The mass shootings do is they create a wave of publicity and a wave of revulsion and hopefully can spur things along.
By the way, when you talk about mental health, a contradiction, as I see it, is that the NRA says the problem is too many mentally ill people with guns, but they refuse to fix the holes in the background check system that would actually stop them from buying. So do you think real universal background checks would make a big difference on
this?
No.
I mean, that's one of my points, is that, first of all, a lot of guns are sold illegally. Second of all, because of the holes in the mental health system, people who are, in fact, mentally ill, have never been diagnosed, are on no meds, have no psychiatrist, and there's no way a background check right. finds them.
And we'll talk more about this on tomorrow's show with Paul Barrett, author of Glock, The Rise of America's Gun. But how much mental health history do you have to get on one of those backgrounds? If you go to a therapist three or four times, are
no,
you
won't on, be. You won't be on a background.
If you really take an antidepressant drug?
No, you pretty much have to be committed. You have to have spent time in a hospital to show up. I mean, James Holmes was under the care of a psychiatrist, as you may recall, at the university where he had just dropped out. And that would never have shown up, a private psychiatric session. I mean, there are lots of people who are on Xanax and talk to psychologists who own guns mm-hmm. and without a problem. But you know, this is why I love this character witness idea. If James Holmes had to get two people to go down to City Hall and testify to his character to get a gun, he would have never gotten a gun.
Let's take a few phone calls for New York Times columnist Joe Nocera. Our lines are packed. Alan in West Orange, you're on WNYC on the fiscal cliff. Hello.
Yeah, thank you. I think the fiscal cliff resolution was misleading. I have to go in and tell my employees now that there's a 2% increase in the payroll tax, which is going to be almost more than the they would have saved had they gone to $250,000 or less. That 2% is a killer. That's $10, $20 out of everybody's paycheck that only makes $300-$400 a year. So I'm sorry, $300-$400 a month. So
right, Alan, you're right. And the payroll tax, which funds Social Security and Medicare in particular, is regressive, Joe.
That's right.
But it was a temporary cut intended to be temporary.
Yes, we'll see how temporary it actually winds up being. The caller is exactly right. It's not just the payroll tax, which is the immediate thing, but all this talk about getting rid of tax loopholes, tax breaks, tax benefits. The more you do that, the more you raise taxes on the middle class, because you're going to touch the mortgage, you're going to touch the mortgage deduction, the child care deduction. You know, those are the key tax breaks for the middle class. The wealthy, you know, they've got their ways.
I noticed too that after $300,000 a year in this deal, you start to hit a limit on tax deductions. Is that the broaden the base tax reform they've been talking about, or is there a bigger debate on that yet ahead?
Well, the reason there would be a bigger debate on this ahead is because nobody's had the nerve to come out and say what it fundamentally means once you start eliminating tax deductions. And the one time this country really did tax reform in the modern era, which is during Ronald Reagan's presidency, you know, they had a huge fight over the mortgage deduction, and ultimately it was saved just because the population was up in arms about the idea that you could take away our mortgage deduction, which is, by the way, the number one tax break in the country, more than any corporate break. I mean, more federal money is lost through the mortgage deduction than any other single thing.
Are you for keeping it or against it?
I don't know how. You know, I actually think if we got rid of it, it wouldn't change the desire of people to own homes. I don't think it's a giant motivator. So, if you eliminated it and still kept the carried interest for hedge fund managers, so they only pay 15% of income, then of course I'm in favor of keeping it. But if you did it as part of a broader effort that actually does bring some fairness into the tax system, yeah, then I probably would be in favor of getting rid of it.
Nathan in Rockland County, you're on WNYC. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show, and I just wanted to point out a couple of things about the gun control thing, if you don't mind going back to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm against gun control. And I think the important thing to remember, and you guys were talking about this before, is that mass shootings are such a huge anomaly and so incredibly rare. You know, like, our kids are safe in school. It's important to point out.
But therefore what?
Therefore, you know, making a new gun laws, maybe now it's not the thing to do, you know.
Joe?
Can I respond to that? There's two things I think about this. First of all, we need to stop calling it gun control, and we need to start calling it gun regulation, because that's what it is.
What's the difference?
Oh, well, in the minds of people, gun control signals the idea that we're going to take everybody's guns away. Regulating guns, it's like we regulate many, many other things. We regulate children's toys. We're starting to regulate tobacco. We regulate things that potentially can harm you. Why are we not regulating guns? That's point number one. Point number two is, it's sort of like climate change, in the sense that with climate change, these once-in-a-100-year events are coming every year. Well, with mass shootings, they're not as rare as they used to be. And there have been, you know, four or five big ones this year alone, plus all the little ones where the guy just shoots three or four people. And so, you know, the idea that you're supposed to accept this as part of living in America because people have the right to have guns seems utterly insane to me.
So, Nathan, if they're not as rare as they used to be, and, of course, how many school shootings or mall shootings or movie theater shootings or temple shootings, and each of those things happened this past year, do you need before you want to do everything you could do, before doing something new on mental health, doing, you know, things on I don't know, conflict resolution, and looking at the extended magazines that let people fire off so many rounds before they have to reload, or close up the loopholes in the background check system? Why not?
Extended magazines, right? It's another good issue. I don't think that extended magazines are more dangerous. It's a 10-round magazine versus 30-round magazine, right?
Right.
So a 30-round magazine is standard size magazine, but whatever, it's semantics. So 10 rounds, if I'm carrying three 10-round magazines, I'm carrying 30 rounds. Reloading a semi-automatic weapon is quick. I mean, the reason so many people died in this school is, horrifyingly, they were trapped like fish in a barrel, not because the person had a 30-round magazine. You know?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's a combination. Ultimately, people have to stop and reload, and maybe that's a moment where somebody can jump them or something.
Don't you think there's something pathetic that we're even talking about this? 10-round magazines versus 30-round magazines in mass shootings? I mean, to me, that's the horrifying thing. We really have accepted it.
I know you got to go in a minute. Do you want to touch on your other big topic of 2012, college football? Do you watch bowl games this time of year?
You know, most of the bowl games are so boring, and they're just all about corporate sponsors that I don't, but I'm certainly looking forward to the national championship game. Notre Dame is back, and that's actually a big deal. And in the book that I'm working on, I'm now discovering how important Notre Dame's TV deal, how that was an early warning signal for what was to come, because Notre Dame was the first school that had its very own TV deal with NBC for many, many years.
Meaning, what when you say what was to come, you mean everybody getting rich but the
yes.
players?
Well, yes. Or the fact that everybody was getting rich, because prior to that, you know, coaches actually made $200,000 instead of $4 million. Yeah, that's right. You know, the reason everybody's getting rich is because the money has to go someplace, and it's not going to the labor. But we could talk about this for hours and probably shouldn't, at least not today.
All right. Well, at least you didn't maybe watch the Chick-fil-A Bowl the other night or whatever it was.
No, but I've heard the Chick-fil-A marketing guy talking about how much they love the Chick-fil-A Bowl because they give Chick-fil-A to everybody before the game who's tailgating.
Joe Nocera, all right, we're going to leave it there. I could go on and keep switching back and forth between topics. No, I'm going to ask you one other thing. Do you think I heard – one version of what's going on in Washington, Boehner is going to win back his caucus by getting really, really tough on guns. You have any insight, knowledge?
I'm going to Washington right now. When I come back, I'll give you an answer.
All right. Go catch a train. Joe Nocera, New York Times columnist, thank you very much. And we'll take some more of your phone calls. Patricia in Summit, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi there. Yeah, sadly, especially talking about this gun issue, it doesn't seem like we'll get anything of meaningful legislation done unless there's term limits and election reform. And I one thing I found so shocking is that Congress people who get paid to supposedly legislate are afraid to do anything because they feel they're going to be primaried. And that's shameful. You don't have a right to keep your seat. People have a right to vote you in or vote you out.
They really need to do something about the redistricting because there are so many fewer competitive districts today than there were even 10 years ago that the real competition is between the people who are a little more moderate in one party and the people who are a little more extreme in one party. And so they're not really worried about, in the Republican majority in the House, getting ousted by a Democrat. They're worried about whether they're going to get primaried by a Tea Partier. So that definitely is the dynamic. Mike in Madison, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Brian. How are you, man? Happy New Year.
Good. What's up?
Hey, I usually love Joe, and I can't believe that I'm calling to actually disagree with him. But I'm a rare breed. I'm a social worker, and I own firearms. And I think that, you know, I respect Joe, but I think that the mental health piece has to be what we focus on. We focus on guns all the time. I live in New Jersey. We have very restrictive laws, and for the most part, they work. But this Newtown shooting was a prime example. You know, this kid went to buy a gun 2 days before the shooting, was denied because he wouldn't submit to a background check because he knew something would come up. And so because he was mentally ill and not being treated, you know, went and tragically killed his mom and took her guns. There's no gun control law except an outright ban that would have stopped him. But what might have stopped him is if it was easier for his mom to get the help that she was trying to get in dealing with him. She's trying to get a conservatorship with him to make him get treatment. Mm-hmm. And there were so many hoops she had to jump through.
Or maybe, Mike, a combination where what you say, plus she was an NRA poster girl, you know?
Totally.
She was out buying Bushmasters and, you know, all these other things
exactly.
for target
but,
practice.
You know,
they were lying around the house with the extended clips and the whole deal.
Exactly, Brian. They were not secured. I mean, I own them. They're in my home. They're behind several different layers of locks. The ammunition is stored in a completely separate part of the house, you know, behind lock and key, you know, and that's the way it has to be. And I'm fine with that because I have small children in the home. And my neighbor and I discussed that if anything ever were to happen, like, you know, the troubles that Adam Lanza was having, that we would, you know, you sell ours or store them at the police station.
So why not both things?
No, I think there needs to be both things. My point is, I think that what people don't want to talk about, and I see this all the time in my job. I work with children and families. I work with mentally ill people all the time. Mm-hmm. The majority of them are not violent, even when they are not getting the right treatment. But the problem is, it's not funded properly, and nobody wants mm-hmm. to talk about it. And no one's going to have, you know, a march on Washington of people that suffer from mental
right.
illness because it's a dirty secret. Nobody wants to talk about it.
I think you're right. And we had somebody from the Mental Illness Policy Advocacy Group on after Newtown to lay out what their agenda is, which would dovetail with yours, not on the guns part, but on the mental illness part. And they're just not getting a lot of other media invites. So both and solutions rather than either or solutions. Mike, thank you for your call. Thanks to all of you for your calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will talk to environment journalist Mike Hewitt on reasons to be optimistic in 2013 about global warming. Stay with us.